We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for January 8th, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, a group of scientists want to have talks about climate change with the American Farm Bureau Federation. We'll have this and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason looks at the demand curve for soybeans. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, 560, up 9 3/4. July at 582 3/4, up 9 1/2. March wheat from CME Group, 568 1/2, up 10 3/4. May, 580 3/4, up 10 3/4. July, 590 1/2, up 10 1/2. March corn, 423, up 5 1/2. May, 433 1/4, up 5 1/4. July, 441 3/4, up 5. December, 449, up 5 1/2. January beans, 10.13, down 4 3/4. March, 10.22, down 4. May, 10.27 3/4, down 3 1/4. July, 10.32 1/4, down 3 1/4. August, 10.28 1/2, down 2 1/2. January soybean meal, 306.80, down 20. January soybean oil, 39.53, down 46. February live cattle, 85.82 1/2, down 10. April, 89.80, up 35. January feeders, 96.35, down 10. March, 96.65, down 17 1/2. February lean hog, 67.25, up 15. And April, 71.42 1/2, up 52 1/2. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Looking at AM 580, meteorologist Ed Keezer's two-state forecast tonight. He says in western Illinois, clear to partly cloudy and bitterly cold. In eastern Illinois and southwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries. Elsewhere in Indiana, cloudy with snow showers and heavier snow squalls downwind of Lake Michigan. Lows ranging from 13 below zero in far northwestern Illinois to 13 above zero in far southeastern Indiana. And then tomorrow in Illinois and southwestern Indiana, partly to mostly sunny and cold. Elsewhere in Indiana, cloudy with scattered snow showers and heavier lake effect snow squalls in parts of northwestern and north central Indiana. Highs ranging from 5 in northwestern Illinois to 22 in southeastern Indiana.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Your key indicator, the wheat market, continues to bang up against the 200-day moving average. Did it again today, a third day in a row. And we're kind of wondering what your thoughts on that are.
Well, I find it really amazing, Dave, that the corn and wheat both, because I think of the index fund buying and the perception that the index funds are going to keep buying, continue to fight off negative fundamentals. I mean, we had a marketing year low on the weekly wheat export sales on yesterday, and I think corn was a seven-week low, and it was down almost 70% from its four-week average, and yet the feed grains continue to be well underpinned and well supported by the idea that the rebalancing by the index funds are going to happen. And when you look at the year-to-date net gain or loss from December 30th of 08 to December 31st of 09, it makes sense why the indexes may want to be buying into the corn and the wheat more than the beans, because the beans, where they were up with the soy oil quite a bit, soy oil was up 21% for the year in 2009. Corn was only up 0.5%, and wheat was actually down over 11%. So those are the major thoughts that are running through my mind right now. I felt like that the big thing in the wheat, other than the 200-day moving average, was the fact that the Kansas City wheat came in for a change and led the Chicago higher. And I don't know whether that has some weather relation to it because of the bitter cold out west, and they don't have as much snowpack, or what exactly that was. But the wheat was well underpinned again today from the index fund mindset. And on the corn side, it's been reported so far since the close, index-related funds look like they bought about 8,000 contracts of corn.
Meanwhile, if we get anything near the 43.55 million acres that you're forecasting for next Tuesday's report in winter wheat, this market should roll over.
Well, you would think that, especially if the dollar finds stability. That was a big change in the market late in the day, along with the Kansas City leading the Chicago pit. The dollar turned back lower, sharply lower, and went right back close to its day's lows from earlier in the morning session in about 20 minutes. It was a remarkable shift in direction for the dollar. And so if the dollar finds support next week, and the acreage, I would even say with the average trade guess just under 41 million on all winter wheat, even if we got 41.5 to 42 million acres, I would think that would be enough to cause some of the longs, especially the commodity trading fund longs, to go ahead and exit their positions after the report comes out.
Do you have a sense that Sunday night's trade could be rather volatile?
Well, I think it's going to be just because of this week. I mean, what I was amazed by was that beans, for instance, March beans, they only closed down 26.5 cents this week. And I found that to be quite remarkable. It felt like it was a lot more than that, in my mind anyway. And when I looked at the weekly range of March beans, after making that 1074 and three-quarter high on the post-holiday trade when we came back from the holiday, we went down to 10.13 and a quarter today. That's a 61.5 cent range. So that's what it felt like to me, was that we were down a lot harder. So, yes, I think the whipsaw price action and the fear and the position squaring will cause us to have very wild moves, both intraday and, you know, over the course of the next three, four, five trading sessions before the actual report comes out.
I guess my point on the beans is, while we did see that 20-plus cent decline, we really haven't done chart damage.
We haven't, and that's probably the number one thing that I'm so glad you brought up, because I think it felt a lot worse than it was, and both fundamentally and technically. But when you look at the technicals, March beans, March meal, March bean oil, all trading and straddling their 50-day moving averages. January beans, the one in delivery, went down to that 10.05 level today. That was right on a major key trend line support on the weekly continuation chart, and so I couldn't agree more with you. The technicals in the beans feel very, very ugly, but when you look at the charts, they really didn't do a lot of damage.
What else are you keeping an eye on?
Well, we've got the outside market still in this back and forth mindset, and I think that's going to be something to be just as important as the report next week. And what I'm getting at, Dave, is you've got the economic growth in 2010 coming by most accounts. The Kansas City Fed chief said that he's looking for growth in 2010 exceeding 3%, maybe up to 4%. You had the retail sales figure better than I thought they would be for December, better than trade estimates. You even got the IMF more optimistic about 2010 commodity demand and global economic demand as well. And then late today in the session, the Economic Cycle Research Institute came out with their leading indicator, and it was the best in 18 months. That's a key indicator that I use when looking at the business cycle analysis. And so all these indicators are pointing to a stronger demand recovery in the global economy, and that puts more pressure and more precedence and importance on the S&P 500 to keep rolling and keep going higher. And so if we don't see that and the technicals give way on such overbought conditions, I think that spells some trouble for the commodities next week.
We did tag the on that S&P chart, the continuation weekly, the one I like to keep an eye on, that 50% retracement level that we had been talking about weeks and weeks ago.
Exactly. And so it's running red hot. It's met its objectives. And everybody in the financial world, for the most part, seems to be on the same page that we're coming out of this recession. And maybe it won't be a W in terms of a return to growth, but at least we'll hold fast to what gains we have made so far. And that's what I like about the technicals now, is that if we have good fundamentals, you know, being pushed out there by the traders, and the fundamentals are suggesting that we're too overdone at this point and very, very overbought, I'm going to respect those technicals very, very nicely next week and take them at face value if they start to give sell signals, especially if it's after the report. So hopefully we'll get a friendly bean report and they'll cut some supply. We won't get too big of wheat acres, and we'll keep the S&P running higher. If we can do that, then maybe we can continue gains until we get a February break.
We have about a minute left. Mike, lay out, based on some of the objectives you might see in the report, what hedging strategies you might employ afterwards.
I really like getting that wheat hedged aggressively if I'm anywhere close to the acreage number. So we hit 590. We closed above 590 today in July wheat. I don't want to let that number slip, Dave. And I've talked to a lot of the clients this week and said if we get back up to that 590, $6 level, let's press the sell side, especially going into the report. Do it in a conservative manner so we can't get burnt too bad. But we do have an extremely good blanket of snow over the wheat right now. So I think the fundamentals would say between the export demand, the dollar finding about the lowest price it's been in many, many years, and the actual crop, whatever the acres may be, the crop is in pretty good standing right now. I think the wheat sales are probably the top for me at this point. If we don't get a friendly supply report on the beans on Tuesday, I think we're going to have to press the sale button a lot harder in the bean complex, because this may be the beginning of a new wave lower, and that's where these technicals you and I talked about are going to be every bit as important as those S&P technicals that we talked about as well.
Thank you much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, a group of scientists want to sit down with American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman to discuss the Farm Bureau's position on climate change data and its, quote, inaccurate and marginalized stance challenging the science on climate change. Three climate scientists penned the letter, which was co-signed by 40 other scientists, stating that with the grave risks that climate change poses to the world and U.S. agriculture, we are disappointed that the American Farm Bureau has chosen to officially deny the existence of human-caused climate change. Farm Bureau has been opposed to climate legislation in Congress that would work to reduce greenhouse gas emissions through cap and trade. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Blanche Lincoln says that during the first 3 months of this year, she plans to focus on reauthorizing child nutrition funding before the budget baseline comes out, and also deal with the derivatives portion of financing regulatory reform legislation. Another item on Lincoln's high priority list is helping farmers get direct financial aid to compensate for losses suffered last year due to adverse weather. The World Organization for Animal Health says it will study the impact of meat output on climate change in the light of debate about meat's contribution to greenhouse emissions. The initiative, which will be the OIE's first on an environmental issue, follows requests from its member countries to look at a question that has prompted calls to eat less meat. A long-awaited report from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission on its investigation into drastic cotton price fluctuations during the week of March 3, 2008, contained no real surprises. The CFTC says it found no evidence of market manipulation and attributed the sudden spike and fall to a, quote, multitude of changing expectations regarding fundamental and economic factors. The CFTC 27-page report, among other factors, discusses the changeover from PIT to electronic trading, tight credit conditions, the use of options prices to determine margin requirements, and the presence of large institutional investors such as index funds. CME Group announced plans yesterday to launch its standalone emissions trading exchange in the first quarter of this year. Green Exchange Holdings, LLC, a joint venture between CME and a group of banks and brokers, would take over a number of products handled by the Chicago Group's New York Mercantile Exchange unit. The Green Exchange still requires U.S. regulatory approval, and its backers are also seeking clearance from United Kingdom authorities. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The demand curve for soybeans has shifted to the right. Todd Gleason files this report on what it means.
The demand curve is the graph depicting the relationship between the price of a certain commodity, in this case soybean, and the amount of it consumers are willing and able to purchase at a given price. When you put it with the supply curve, it looks something like an X, and where they cross is price. Now, if you take the demand curve and move it to the right, or add new demand, for instance, China's soybean buying spree, then the price of a commodity goes higher. The question is whether or not that new demand is temporary or permanent. A University of Illinois ag economist, Errol Good, says at the moment, if nothing else, the Chinese soybean purchases have shifted the demand curve to the right.
I think it has. It's done two things. I think it's shifted the overall demand curve, saying in the past you think of demand as demand for consumption. Now, if you have demand for inventory as well, that does shift the demand curve, saying at a given price, the market is taking more soybeans than they have in the past. That's by definition a shift in demand. Secondly, is that there seems to be a seasonal shift that not only is China taking more soybeans, but it appears that they're taking them much earlier in our marketing year than they have in the past. If you just compare 09 to 08, first quarter, we've sold more than double the amount of soybeans to China that we did a year ago. So one of the interesting things that's going to unfold over the next few months is how front-loaded was the export demand this year. We know we can't maintain this pace, but how rapidly and when will the pace drop off, I think, is yet to be seen.
Interestingly enough, Darrell Good says the new demand for soybeans from China is conceptually the same as the new demand for corn from the U.S. ethanol industry. That is to say, the historic corn-to-soybean ratio remains the same because the new demand for each commodity appears to have increased by roughly the same percentage. and so the price has shifted to the right or higher. However, that is not the case for wheat, and it now is closer to the price of corn than usual. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
I would expect, Bruce, that it would be the hardy soul that would be toting grain to market this week.
Hardy might be one definition, yes. I think we had two trucks in yesterday, so not a real big receipt day. We might have doubled that today.
Four trucks today?
Yeah. Now, Monday and Tuesday, actually, we were getting some new crop corn coming in out of the field at four locations.
Interesting. What do you anticipate basis to do now? Do you think you will have some seasonal gains from here on out?
We could possibly see some seasonal gains. We have been buying a lot of grain here recently, both old crop and new crop, corn and beans both on up days. So there's been quite a bit of cash movement. Corn, we keep fighting that window where we've got a lot of corn that has to move in the next 7.5 months to get ready for harvest. You know, that's the problem of this business. You can never say harvest is over. As soon as you do, you start looking for next year and getting ready for it.
Do you have corn on the ground?
We have about 2 million bushels on the ground.
And how well has it been in terms of against the norm to get transportation to move those trains?
Transportation has been moving relatively rapidly. Once you get cars, the cars are available and they're moving fast. We're still not having as much competition from other forms of freight out there on rail. Probably the biggest problem we have is muted demand for corn. There's just not that good of exports going out of the Gulf, and that is leading to a lack of demand for Gulf and the specs. You know, they're less tolerant of FM at the Gulf than they are for some domestic locations, and that gets to be a problem this year.
And what is your bent on or idea that on corn demand? Do you anticipate it picking it up?
Corn demand scares me. When you go through your gut slot of harvest and your seasonal cheap prices and some pretty weak basis levels, and we're not buying that much corn demand, it looks to me like the buying interest is coming from money looking for a place to go rather than from an end user wanting to put coverage on.
Might we also say the same about soybean demand as we're sort of winding down U.S. purchases and maybe South American purchases picking up?
Yeah, we're starting to see South American start to come online. There's some articles floating around today on China raising some key interest rates out there. The idea that maybe the Chinese have overbooked a little bit and we'll see some cancellations as they start to shift purchases to Brazil.
What about your prices today, sir?
We are at $3.88 on nearby corn and $9.97 on soybeans.
Thank you much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. I will be back in 2 minutes with a look at the agricultural weather with the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. It's National English Toffee Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1800, the first soup kitchens in London were opened to serve the poor. In 1823, Alfred Wallace was born. Wallace was a British naturalist who developed a theory of natural selection independently of Charles Darwin. In 1825, Eli Whitney died, inventor of the cotton gin. He also developed the concept of mass-producing interchangeable parts. Whitney introduced the idea into the manufacture of muskets for the U.S. government. In 1956, Greenleaf Pickard died. a U.S. electrical engineer. His invention of the crystal detector was one of the first devices widely used for receiving radio broadcasts. In 1997, Melvin Calvin died, an American biochemist. He was one of a team that used carbon-14 isotopes as a tracer to map the complete route that carbon travels through a plant during photosynthesis, starting with the absorption of atmospheric carbon dioxide to its conversion into carbohydrates and other organic compounds. The Calvin group showed that sunlight acts on the chlorophyll in a plant to fuel the manufacturing of organic compounds rather than on carbon dioxide, as was previously believed. And in 1998, Walter E. Dimer died, an American businessman. He accidentally invented bubble gum in 1928 while experimenting with recipes for a chewing gum base. By the way, the very first batch was pink, the color that remains to this day. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Josh Darr from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, Dave. Happy cold January here to you.
Well, as long as it doesn't snow this weekend, I guess we'll be fine. What we don't need to see is more snow on top of what we've already seen, although the wind might be a factor, I suppose.
Yeah, there's the snow that fell here with our Clipper system yesterday dropped a good 3 to 6 inches across the majority of Illinois. Here, some Lake Enhancement near northeastern Illinois. Winds will blow some of that snow until we get into Sunday. That's when high pressure moves over the area, and we're actually the Saturday night into Sunday morning will be the coldest readings here across the region. And mids last night were in the single digits far down southern Illinois, teens in the central portion of Illinois. You take 10 to 15 degrees off those readings tonight and tomorrow night as we get the core of this Arctic air mass moving over Illinois. The blowing snow tonight, that starts to subside late tomorrow, and then high pressure overhead on Saturday night could result in the chilliest evening we've seen here of the winter.
And then a warming trend next week, of course, that being relative.
Yes, in quotation, certainly. It does look like the pattern here as we get into next week starts to moderate out of these very cold levels we've seen. You can get back to normal. That's about as good as we can do here. The snowpack we have across the broad cross-section of the lower 48, actually 60% of the lower 48 has snowpack as of this morning. That's going to temper this pattern, which is favorable for a warm-up, but with that snowpack in place, we can only struggle to get back to normal. We have this period of 10 days here upcoming next week and into the week of the 23rd where we see some moderation in the pattern until we think the last week of January and back into early February we get colder again.
Turn your attention to South America. It's been trending pretty wet, especially in Brazil. Is that going to continue?
For the foreseeable future, it looks like that's just a short-term issue here versus a sign of any problematic conditions starting to develop in Brazil longer period of time here. And overall, both Brazil and Argentina look in great shape, and the weather is absolutely starting to promote above-trend yields here in both countries.
Any chance that they'll be nipped by soybean rust?
Maybe some isolated issues of that down south. But other than that, overall, compared to some of the issues we've seen, particularly in Argentina the past year, looks like things are shaping up to be much, much better this the end of this growing season in South America.
Where is Chesapeake Energy keeping its eye on globally these days?
All the major population centers of the Northern Hemisphere are very cold right now. East Asia, very impressive cold there. It started in November, has pretty much persisted through the winter so far. UK, Europe, very cold here as well. So it's kind of a trifecta of cold with the U.S., Western Europe, and East Asia, all very cold. And so energy demand on the whole is the highest we've seen since the winter of 2000-2001.
Thank you very much, Josh.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. You can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the Audio Analysis tab. This is Dave Dickey.